Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My guest today, this evening for some of you on the East Coast, is Dr. Patty Britton. And Patty and I have known each other for 26 to 27 years. Isn't that right, Patty?
Oh, who's counting?
Who's counting? I think one of the first conferences where we actually took photographs of each other with other people and started conversing was with Dr. William Masters and Virginia Johnson. Do you remember that? That was about 1991, right in there.
I remember, well, one of the things that I remember so well is that both you and I were very dear friends of Candida Royale.
Of course.
And because Candida and I and you were frequently sexuality experts who appeared at various sexology conferences, she and I used to do what we referred to then as the Siskel and Ebert of porn. And
that's
we used
right.
to do a review of the newest in adult porn or entertainment, especially as it related to us as feminists, as sexuality educators, and as sexologists. And you were always there. And it was just, oh, it's just so great. So we go back a long time for all you listeners. We don't want to put in the actual numbers.
Well, it is a long time. But I wanted to also tell the listeners that you are a nationally board-certified clinical sexologist and world-renowned sex coach. You're the author of hundreds of articles, and is it up more than four amazing books now? It's probably more than four.
It's five.
It's five, yes. And we'll want you to talk about your newest book. And you're the former president of ASEC. That was a big job. Did you get enough appreciation for that?
Oh, bring it on. Actually, I want to say something about who I am as a person and just to also reflect on you. And that is that one of the reasons that I get up in the morning is that I have such a passion about positive sexuality and sexual well-being, sexual health, sexual pleasure, and making sure that accurate information is out in the world and that advocacy exists so that people can be free to be who they are. And so, writing these books or doing the online trainings or live trainings, whatever it is that we do, sometimes it's being of service to our field or our profession that really is part of that passion and that sense of appreciation of being able to give in that way. And that's really how I regard my service to ASEC, that really the world's first and premier credentialing organization based in the United States that certifies sex educators, counselors, and therapists. And, I inherited a big change when we went from a board of 27 to, I think, 8 or something, and renewing all of the policies and procedures and international task forces that began under my leadership and on going online and going green. I mean, there were just so many huge changes that I was so privileged to be able to make. And I look back on that as some of the golden years of ASEC. And for me, even though I put in about 30 hours of unpaid time every week, it was worth it. You know what
well,
I mean.
Oh, and you have stories to tell, too, which is...
Oh, yeah, but not on the air.
No. Yes. But... It's a piece of your passion, and you have three businesses, maybe more, but you have Sex Coach you have Sexology U, and World Association of Sex Coaches, and you already talked a little bit about what keeps you going. You're on this mission, but tell us briefly about each of these organizations, and then I want to get into how sex coaching differs from clinical sexology.
Absolutely. It's a funny thing how life unfolds, isn't it?
Yeah.
In 2005, my book came out, which seems like a century ago, And that was The Art of Sex Coaching, Expanding Your Practice. And I was invited to write that book for W.W. Norton and Company, which is a really esteemed academic and professional publishing company worldwide. And it was such a privilege, again, that word comes up, to be able to kind of download as the pioneer of sex coaching as a credentialed profession. That book really solidified what you need to know, what you need to do, how you need to process yourself, and what you really need to be prepared to work with real live human beings, because sex is layered, complex, and deep. And I'm very big on keeping people away from what I call the Humpty Dumpty effect, which is don't please say you're an expert and you're going to work with another person and you're going to crack them open to the core of their essential sexual self, and they're going to fall apart like Humpty Dumpty, and you're not going to have the wherewithal to facilitate putting them back together again. And that's really part of what motivated me to bring my book alive as a training manual and say, well, gee, there's this thing called online education, and this was, you know, a while back, like in 2007, the idea was born.
That's
2 years
right.
After the book came out, and I thought, well, why don't we just bring this book alive and bring the training that's embedded in this textbook, so to speak, but it's very, you know, readable and user friendly, and make that textbook become an online training program so that people can avail themselves of it and really become competent and credentialed, caring providers who can be what I call a container for what the client may bring. A really seasoned, savvy container where you're clean and clear yourself first. You need to process yourself to do this kind of work. You know that,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, you and I are advocates for that. That's
yes.
why we're big on training and credentialing
mm-hmm.
and why we're part of ASECT and other organizations that substantiate that we're the real deal. We're not an overnight. We didn't take a weekend course and now we're an expert on this. I've been doing this, well, a lot of years, over 40. So
over 40, that's more than I've been doing it 35, and I thought that was pretty long time, but you're over 40. Wow.
Well,
okay.
Over 40. Yes. Well, for someone who's only 49, that's really a feat, isn't it?
You started so young, Patty.
Yes. Fooled you. So actually what came about was the formation of Sex Coach University, which is sexcoachu, the letter u.com. And it began really as a way to take people through a three-part sequence of training them in the basics of what do you kind of need to know to answer questions at, let's say, a sex toy party, a home-based party, where you have women saying, but how do I use this? And I've never had an orgasm. How do I get one? Something that basic. And that was our beginning program, and then giving the basic coaching skills so that they would know how to initiate, how to manage a conversation, how to listen deeply and intuitively for what that person is really asking for, and how to unearth the roadblocks. And then it escalated from there to a much more robust and in-depth program that trained people to not only know a little bit about sexuality, but a lot about. And so that morphed into 22 courses, which is now our main program. It's 12 courses in sexology. And it's really, the way I created it, is kind of everything you really need to know about sex, sexuality, sexology, and then learning how to coach and using great books and great tools. We use movies a lot as teachers, so to speak, to bring out the visceral knowing and learning. And I feel very strongly that people need to be taught how to integrate toward applied sexology. That's really the field that I see emerging, which is, you know, the application of what we might call sex therapy or sex counseling, merging with sex education, but also the how of coaching, life coaching, personal coaching, which is now a worldwide global phenomenon of probably thousands of derivations by now. You know, we have, you know, coaching for greatness, coaching for authenticity, the this coach, the that coach. But I'm the one who married sexology with coaching and put it together in this new profession called sex coaching. And so people who go through the program now are really thoroughly trained. They're competent professionals, and they do a practicum on camera. We don't let anybody get out of the program unless they really have proven their skills. They have the knowledge of the skills, and the, are you okay?
Yeah, no, I just, I have
sneezing.
The end of a cold, so I'm trying to keep my cough off
good.
The air. Yeah,
that's not
all right.
Good.
I'm usually very
so
healthy, so it's okay.
So that's yes. The sex coach you, and Sexology You was born only this year in 2017. It was born to address a different kind of population because I'm seeing, and I know you know, and I'm sure many of your guests can talk about, the lack of training, the lack of education, the lack of awareness in healthcare professionals, whether they're physical or, you know, medical health professionals or mental health professionals. In California, only 10 hours of human sexuality are required for somebody to become licensed and do all of the work with a couple or an individual around their life, including their sexuality. And 100%, Diana, of my clients, 100% of my clients are referred by their therapist because therapists are uncomfortable talking about sex. They're not skilled. They don't have the knowledge. They don't even know, want to, or have the ability to open the conversation around sexuality. And that's tragic to me. So we founded Sexology U to bring that sexological piece. In other words, bring people to a place where they could go through a core curriculum, and we have superstars. I wish you were one of our superstars. We'll have to get you on our course roster as one of our experts soon. But we have people like Dr. Marty Klein and Dr. Adam Scheck, both psychologists who are really well known for their expertise and work. And we have a roster of 26 to 30 experts like Dr. Gina Ogden and Tammy Nelson and Deborah Sundahl, the mother of the feminine fountain, and just all kinds of great courses that people can use as electives so that they're well-rounded. In whatever they're a clinician already doing, they now have the sexuality piece. And then the World Association of Sex Coaches is our certifying body. And that is the certifying body of anyone who is an allied professional to sex coaching or clinical sexology. And it's also where we have an international directory of people who apply to become part of that organization. And many of our graduates from Sex Coach U and Sexology U also become part of this roster of qualified, credentialed experts that a consumer can just click a button and go and look up in their town or for the specialty that they're looking for. And this is how we really also we're really servicing our graduates, giving them a platform so that they can attract clients. And it's working beautifully. And so we're actually, it's interesting you should ask me right now because we're in the process of integrating these three entities under a new brand. We're really moving toward integration under a new brand, a new name, a new website, and keeping Sex Coach U and Sexology U and the World Association of Sex Coaches intact, but under a bigger white tent, I'm going to call it. See, I'm going to see Cavalia this week. Do you know what Cavalia is?
I don't. I should, I'm sure, but I don't know.
So Cavalia is one of the Cirque du Soleil performances that Okay. They set up these ginormous white tents in a suburb or a rural area or the outskirts of a city, and the performance is the usual high-flying acrobatics and beautiful costuming and all of that amazement that Cirque du Soleil is about and the music. And 26 horses. And this is what I'm doing on Thursday for my birthday. I'm going to see Cavalia. So I have white tent on my mind.
Well, good. And I remember that in one of your courses, this probably goes back 4 years ago, you did field trips. You took your group to Las Vegas and you saw one of the Cirque du Soleil, the one that was about sexuality. What was the name of it? Do you recall?
Zoomanity.
And that was one of your field trips.
Yes, it was. And you do you remember what happened? So,
tell the story again. I do recall, but it's worth telling again.
Oh, God. So here I am. I'm the professor. I've got seven students in this intense, high fast track, high pace training program. We're in residence for 10 days and nights. and I'm teaching them the art of sex coaching, and we're in Vegas, and we're studying all the time, and I say, we need a night out. We need a break. So we get tickets to Zumanity, which is at one of the big, resort casinos, and it's a circle, and all the seating is around the circle, and the circle's in the center, and it's raunchy. It's like bumping and grinding and half naked and very sexual, and it's, you know, the high wires, the wrapping in the ribbons, the taunting. It's opened by a 7 foot tall drag queen in a black bustier with fishnets.
What a sight.
And it was, the MC was pretty amazing. And so the last part of the show is they say, and now for the orgy. And they start spinning the stage. And the MC, who is in a silver skin-tight bodysuit with the other MC, that was a drag queen, he says, I'm going to find our perfect guest. And so he goes and he snoops around all of the 3,000 people sitting in this auditorium. And he points his finger and he goes, you. And he comes over to me. And Robert, who I hope we can talk about a little bit.
We're going to. Yes, of course.
And he says, get up, Patty, get up. And I went, no, not me. And he says, no, go. So the guy goes, come here. And I get on the stage, and the drag queen has the microphone, and this guy's like undulating against my body. And the two of them say, so what do you do? And I say, I teach people about sex. I'm a sex doctor. And everyone in the audience went nuts.
Yes, of course.
the MCs went, what? You don't really mean that. And then I was the victim of an orgy performance art piece.
Art piece, yes.
All clothed, of course. That was extremely disruptive, is what I'll say.
Right.
And I will never forget it. And of course, once you're the victim that they picked from the audience, then there are many, many photos that are taken of you as the new star of the show. It was hilarious. My students could not believe they happened to pick me. And this was random. No, they didn't know me. Nobody knew me. So this was my Cirque du Soleil experience in Las Vegas. I hope this one is not like that. Be a little dot in the background.
I wouldn't be surprised. You said it was random, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody tipped them off.
I don't think so.
I've been
they
in a couple
really
of situations.
Shocked.
Once in Amsterdam, where our whole group for the World Congress for Sexology in 1991, where we were invited on stage, like about 7 or 8 of us, including Jules Black. It was fun. And then another time at one of the conferences in Atlanta, and our group first went to women stripping, and then we went to another group. These were, you know, field trips to men stripping, and the men absolutely targeted our group. And it was kind of fun. And by the way, the men for the women stripping were much better behaved than the women in the group for the men stripping.
Absolutely. I've led field trips to both as well.
Yeah.
And the women are out of control.
Yeah, they're given permission,
like,
I think.
Right?
To,
like Thunder Down Under is the
that's
show in
right.
Las Vegas that runs.
Yep.
Oh, that's really great.
I went to that.
Really
and
great.
I think it's, you know, women kind of give each other permission. Oh, you know, we can act like we're at a bachelorette party. And
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk
and
about...
And it is hot. It is hot to see men who are, you know, the stereotypical gender role bias is women are the performers. And there's something really, you know, when Magic Mike came out as a movie and Magic Mike 2, you know, there was a kind of ho-humness as people were like, yeah, I'll go see it. But it really was exciting and
yes.
great role modeling for that kind of sense of personal freedom and the ability to really ride the waves of eroticism and not have that be threatening. And that's really part of the work that I'm so passionate about, is teaching eroticism and giving permission.
Yes, so these are really informative and perhaps titillating field trips.
Yes, they are. They can be transformational, like when we take our students from a SAR, our sensitivity training that maybe we'll have time to talk about a little bit. When we take students from a SAR program, which is meant to push their buttons, to, let's say, our latest SAR, we took them to a, not the latest, but two SARs ago, to a shop in San Francisco called Mr. S. Leather. It's been there for a very long time. It's very famous, and it's been predominantly looked at as a gay male fetish shop with a lot of leather and gear and BDSM accoutrements and toys, electrical stimulation, and it runs the gamut in terms of erotic imagery and sexual play objects and costuming. And I had students have breakthroughs from years of social and religious repression. Just being inside that shop for 1 hour changed their entire worldview.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, just to be able to free yourself and to unlock yourself from the bonds of what you were taught that was really about control.
It was about control, right? And really hot sex is about letting go and surrendering.
Yeah.
And unless you're in some BDSM kind of play, role play, where then that's a different thing. But if you're having basic vanilla sex, you know, it's not about being in control. It's about letting go. Letting
Absolutely.
Go, letting go some more.
Yeah, that's what freedom is about.
Yes, that's
right.
But giving
yourself permission. You know, part of the work that I do is training my professionals how to use the model of Pussit, which starts with permission. And sometimes I hear myself when I'm working with a client, or even in a more casual setting, saying, why don't you give yourself permission to, or what if you gave yourself permission to? And that's what true empowerment is based on, is giving yourself permission, making your own choices for your sexual destiny. And the choice making is really based on giving permission to yourself. Isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is this a good time, Patty, to segue into the legacy of your life partner, Dr. Robert Dunlap?
I'd be happy to.
I know you loved him more, but so many other people just loved Robert. And he died way too soon. So would you talk about Robert? Yes.
You know, you're very crunchy on the other side. There's a lot of static. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not. I'm on a landline. Are you on a landline or a cell phone?
I'm on a cell phone that I use all the time.
All right. Well, I'm not aware of static.
Okay.
So let's go with it. I mean, we're having typical Seattle weather here where it's rainy and gray, but talk about Robert. And in fact, some of the more dedicated listeners, because this program is now in its seventh year, will remember you and Robert being, well, I think one time he was on alone, but the rest of the time you were on together. So he was on this program. And, of course, I had a personal relationship with the two of you when I lived in Los Angeles. We had a lot of good times together, and including a retreat at your Arrowhead cabin. So Robert was a special man. He was a special man. So talk about Robert.
So Robert Dunlap was my partner in life and in business, and he was my life partner for 17 years.
Oh, my.
And when I met Robert was a Hollywood actor with a very successful career. And he also had been an independent filmmaker, mostly documentaries. And at the time that I met him, it was a very uncanny time for both of us, in that I had sort of just moved to L.A. And he was working on a documentary called Beyond Vanilla. And I met him actually before he started working on the documentary. This is a funny story. I had met Robert at a mutual friend's house because we were in a money and prosperity empowerment group. And because I'm really big on that, I'm actually developing a course on that for people who want to take that kind of training and education. Because I think that as entrepreneurs in sexology, we need more of that. We need to know how to clear our thermostat for our abundance consciousness, not our poverty consciousness, and learn how to use sustain financial success. So there we were. This has been a theme in my life for many years. And I meet this guy, and it was only him and me and this group and our friends. And so we're at our house at the dining room table listening to Susie Orman, and we left the group at the end of our session. And she said, "So did you like him?" And I said, "Oh, no, I didn't like him at all." And she said to him, "Did you like her?" And he said, "No, I didn't like her at all." Well, a year later, he had been working on a documentary called Beyond Vanilla on BDSM, kink, and fetish. He was the one of the directors. He was the producer. And he spent hours shooting 200 or more people who are in that community or those communities around the country. And really got, I'm going to say, got affected so deeply by who he met and the opening that he felt and the permission to be a, have a bigger concept of sexuality and understand erotic power exchange and how diverse human beings really are as sexual beings. And he liberated himself. And so I met him a year later at a Christmas party. And there he was, and there I was, and I had had all kinds of change in my life at that time, and he had had change in his life beyond vanilla. And we looked at each other, and I went, "Who's that handsome guy?" And he went, "Who's that beautiful woman?" And we kind of flirted, and we spent the whole party talking to each other. And at the end of the party, he said, "Would you like to come spend New Year's with me?" And I said, "No, I don't know you well enough to come to your cabin in Lake Arrowhead to come to for the weekend. We just met, really, even though we just spent 6.5 hours in a party locked in each other's gaze and energy." And so after the New Year's holiday ended, we went out on a date on January 2nd.
Yes.
And we have never been apart since, except his death. And the sad
Patty.
News is that, so we became a couple right away. We were, you know, people who knew who we were. We knew we had a good thing in each other, and it became a lasting, lifelong relationship that really grew very quickly into a partnership. And we were a couple right from the beginning. And unfortunately, Robert became ill because not only was he a filmmaker and an actor, but he was a media genius. And now I really see what a genius he was now that he's gone. And he made two other movies while we were together. One was In My Father's Footsteps, which is a World War II story of a pilot whose plane fell within enemy lines in Europe during World War II, and the letters that were recovered. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And it's a docudrama. And then he made the life story of Xaviera Hollander, which changed his life even more dramatically and mine, because we became closer to her, and she is my cousin. So
I know.
Xaviera, you know, embraced Robert as family, and that movie really deepened our bond and our respect for her as an incredible, I would say, as having a contribution to our deeper understanding of the human sexual experience, but also culture and the art. So this year, recently, Robert and I did what we did all the time for the last 5 years. We had been going to Europe or Eastern Europe to lead professional training programs. And this year we went to Prague in the Czech Republic to attend the World Congress. Just like you were talking about it earlier, the World Congress of Sexual Health is every other year in a country somewhere in the world, in a really usually a beautiful city. And this was in Prague, which is a beautiful, beautiful location. And we were co-presenters, and we got there, and Robert wasn't feeling well. And I knew he wasn't well before we left. He had had a little bit of a procedure that I think had stimulated some illness. He wasn't really feeling like he was healed. But he went anyway, because that was Robert. He was not a guy you could say, no, you're not going to travel. He was an adventurer at the core. And he got sick on the trip, and he ended up hospitalized. And long story short, he got a really, really, really bad infection. And it ended up in his being hospitalized in Warsaw, Poland, where he was for 6 weeks, mostly in an ICU, fighting for his life. And a week after I came home with the notion that I would go back and help him recover and that he would be coming home, he died. And so it's been a very tragic loss to my life and to the community of sexology, because I've never met anybody who was so loved by so many people.
I think that's true, Patty.
Right? The tweets, the Facebook comments, we had 55 people show up to his memorial service, which was just a month ago, because it took a while for the paperwork and for things to get settled to then plan this memorial. And not one person flaked out, which is very not like L.A., let me tell you.
Yeah.
And people rallied and just continued to really send their love and support and to me, but really I'm speaking to Robert and what an incredible legacy he left, including the last thing that we did together that really was of significance is that we wrote a book together. And this is really our only book that we wrote together, even though I helped with the Zaviera documentary. I'm the executive producer of it, and I helped with a lot of it. The truth is that the SAR book, it's called Designing and Leading a Successful SAR, which stands for Sexual Attitude Reassessment and Restructuring. That book, when we wrote it last summer, we kept saying, this is our legacy, this is our legacy. If we left now, we would have left our legacy, and little did we know that I was speaking, you know, some sort of prescient words about what might happen.
Yes.
We did leave. We have our legacy in print, and it was an incredible, incredible journey that we made together. And recently, the last SAR that I led without him, with other people helping me, was SAR number 51 in 10 years. So that's a lot of thousands of people that we've touched in that way. And
yes,
of course, hundreds of people that we've put through our programs and who have graduated or who are right now our students. We have an average of 70 to 90 active students at any given day in our programs.
70 to 90. You are very busy, but it's got to be a huge adjustment for you, Patty, to do this work now alone without your partner in life and partner in business at your side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And death is a great teacher. You know, death teaches you to set boundaries and to get to know who you are. When you merge with someone in your identity, and we really were a unit, and that was part of the painful process, is understanding that when you really are a public figure, as I am and as Robert was, and we were Patty and Robert as though that were one word, not
yes,
three words. And now just Patty remains, and it's taking a lot to adjust to that identity for myself, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm so blessed with so many incredible friends and colleagues and people who have just come to my support. And so, you know, I'm building new teams. It's very beautiful. It's almost like Robert's here, you know, he's sitting on my shoulder and he's just kind of directing it now. And he's, you
mm-hmm.
know, saying, oh, go in this direction. No, go in that direction. So it's all good. And I'm looking forward to what the next chapter may bring. But I miss him terribly.
Of course. I, you know, my late husband, Charlie, died so suddenly. And you probably remember my talking about this in Los Angeles, because But
yes,
it was just shattering and shocking because he died of an unexpected heart attack. So I'm familiar with grief, and it's an ongoing kind of thing. And it is, you said, it's death is a great teacher. It is. It can deepen you. You wouldn't choose that way, but it can deepen you and it can expand your perspectives. And one of the things is life is uncertain, so don't pass up opportunities to tell someone you love them, for example, or and my path of grief was smoother with Charlie's death because we didn't miss an opportunity to say how grateful we were for each other, and we did it all and said it all in effect, and so there weren't those regrets that some people have. And so there are studies that show that the path of grief is a little smoother when you don't have regrets, and I bet you don't have regrets. I mean, the regret is, as it was for me, that he didn't live longer, but you made the most of the time you had together.
We had an incredible, incredible run, as I call it. You know, coming from growing up in a state where people ski downhill and you call it your run. And we really had a great 17-year run. And, you know, his memory does live on. His legacy does live on. And it's, you know, what happens, I think, I've read 7 books on grief. I write every day in my journal so that I can preserve what I'm learning and how this journey is for me. I plan to write a book about this.
Good.
And I feel very dedicated to talking about preparing for death. I think death is the next frontier. I think sex was the frontier, but I think the new frontier is death. Nobody wants to talk about it. The baby boomer generation sure as hell won't talk about it. No, we're going to live forever. We're going to be young. We're going to get more Botox. You know, I'm going to take another nutritional supplement, hire another personal trainer. No, you're going to die. We're all going to die. That's the only sure thing about living is death is a part of living. And we're not prepared for it. And I want to make sure people learn through this story of Robert, who was not prepared for it, who did not prepare what should have been prepared, and my not being prepared because we were very vital, young, energized, passionate people on a mission. I am that now, and he never was less than that. But he also lived in a body, and he had health challenges along that road. And he was 70. He would have been 75 tomorrow. So
Patty, would have been that's right. Your birthdays are very close.
Yes, yes. Mine is the next day.
Yeah.
Part of another reason that we were so close is that we were these twin flames. So
right.
You know, it is a big loss, and the choice is: do I cave in? Do I go down with the Titanic? Glub, glub, glub. Or do I get a life preserver and move on? Get in the boat and move on. And that's what I'm doing. But you must honor grief. You must go through the process of grief. And I feel that, and this is a strange segue, but I feel that part of the work that I'm inspired to do more of now with my clients, and probably which will become part of my trainings, is the intersection of grief and sex. Because not very many people are talking about that. And there's actually a subfield in sexuality emerging. There's new literature coming out about, I can't remember what they're calling it, but about that intersection. And I think we need to begin to honor that, that there are losses, there's grieving that goes on. And grief is it's really a hard ride to take. But if you don't take the ride, it's going to get you in the end. It's going to come back and come back and come back. Incomplete, unresolved grief is as toxic as getting a very bad diagnosis of cancer.
That's very true. And it's a pay me now or pay me later kind of thing. After Charlie died, a girlfriend of mine, a pediatrician, offered me Prozac. And I said, thank you, but no thank you. I want to go through it all. I want to be very present, and I don't want to be medicated. And in hindsight, that was a good decision.
Absolutely. And boy, do people want to, you know, there's some, I know we're here to talk about sex, but look where we are.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about sex in relation to mortality because, you know, I'm very fortunate. I've been with Brian 7 years now, and our sex life continues to be robust and wonderful, and I'm so appreciative of that. And the thing is, I'm 74, and so I'm certainly much more aware of my mortality. And the thing is, when you're having sex and it's wonderful, committed, interesting, robust, sexy sex, you feel so young, and it's you feel like just the vitality. That and of course it's also good for you. It's the fountain of youth. I mean, Brian and I talk about the three F's. It's free and it's fun and it's the fountain of youth. and it really is all of those things. And I think when we get older, we really can sort of grasp onto those moments and say, oh, I'm going to make the most of this. I'm going to make the most of this. And, yeah, but I wasn't able to do that for a number of years after Charlie died. It you know, grief is a process, as you said.
Well, I think that part of what comes into my mind as we're talking about this topic is also seize the moment.
And, yes,
you know, I think the biggest lesson is don't put off what you could celebrate or engage in or produce or enjoy today till tomorrow. And I think if you asked earlier, you know, are there regrets? I think the only regret is that we really, and this happened on his deathbed. We talked about this the day of his really big surgery in the hospital in Poland. That we had a moment that I actually had someone videotape of Robert's last wishes and last thoughts about us. It's very touching and very beautiful. And I think one of his wishes, should he have lived, was to spend more time together and less time meeting others' needs. And he's right. And that was accurate. And as much as part of what we enjoyed so much together is that our business was our passion that we shared. It was like an art project that we both participated in all the time. There were no days off. There was no time down. It was really about the zest that we had. Everywhere we went, we would take our cameras out and document. Everything we did was, ooh, how can we bring that in? And we'd go see a movie and which we were cinephiles, and we would talk about the movie and like, oh, let's do a podcast about that movie. Oh, that was so great. Oh, this is so important for sexuality. And that kind of zest and passion and shared vision and mission and joy is the fuel for a lot of how we spent our time, but we didn't spend enough time just us. And I think there's something really important about that as we live in this rush era right now where everything has to be Instagram, Insta this, and
Insta,
answering
yeah.
the goddamn phone,
the
e-drive of every person's life I know. At dinner, you're at a beautiful event, and you get a bing. And it's like, oh, I got to check my phone. Really? Do you really have to check your phone? You know, some of my clients check their phone in the middle of making love. Really? And you wonder why things aren't working optimally? So, I mean, that's one of the lessons of, that's one of why I say death is a teacher. It teaches our values. And mm-hmm. it teaches what's really important in life is not how much money is in your bank account at the end of the day. It's how much love is in your life this moment. How much joy is in your life this moment? And are you really living your moment to moment to moment? Or are you deferring it? I think too many people live a deferred life.
I so agree with you. And some of these lessons, these pieces of wisdom, really don't come until you're an older person.
Correct.
And you've had some life experience and some relationship experience. I mean, I didn't. My mother died at 95, at August the 2nd, and one
wow.
of the... Yes, I mean, but she had a long life, you know. And so, but one of the things that I've been doing is going through many, many letters written. She didn't throw anything away. And so, as the oldest of the children, it's been assigned to me to go through these, and then I'm going to send some of them back. But, wow, I'm getting a whole another kind of perspective of my family of origin, and the, because some of these letters go back 80 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that certainly lends perspective, when you have family letters. But really the thing that I took, the main thing that I took away after Charlie's death, and that was now 17 years ago, was life is uncertain. And Stella Resnick says, and we both know Stella, of course we love her, she says, carpe diem, damn it. You know?
That's so true. And you know
yeah.
what's so uncanny, Diana? Just
what?
Before I came in my house where I work to talk to you on this wonderful show, just before I hung up with the very Stella Resnick, who said, please give Diana my love. So
oh.
We're all connected.
We are, and I'm going to be reconnected with her because I've been out of touch. And her husband, Alan, and Robert were such good friends.
Yeah, yeah. Of all the men that Robert knew, Alan, her husband, was his closest friend. And at the memorial, one of the most touching parts of the memorial, we had a very elaborate celebration of his life. And part of it was I designed it like a workshop. And part of what we did was I designated 24 people to speak for 2 minutes each. That was a joke, the 2 minutes. But the first speaker, other than the leader, the welcome, was Alan. And what touched me so deeply is how Robert was able to transcend this male model that we see today, and that is really where the transformation is occurring. I've had this conversation a lot with many of my friends about what how men are changing, and how especially in this era of sexual harassment and exploitation of women, and
yes.
the instant demonizing of men and the patriarchy and that, which is not really where I'm coming from. And hearing men who are willing to get right down to the core of their loving self and be vulnerable and express their emotion, and how Robert was able to get to men and reach the bottom of their hearts and authentically connect with men and as a full human, and brought that out in other men. The weeping that the men shared at the memorial blew me away. And I think it's rare that a man's man can also be a woman's man, can relate to anyone. Robert had this amazing gift of making everyone feel like they were special, and that when he was with that person, you were all that mattered to him. He was like that all the time.
I experienced that with him. I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so glad we're doing this, because Robert deserves to have us talk about the legacy. And so what you're saying is that Alan, Stella's husband, spoke at Robert's memorial and talked about this business of he was a man's man, could relate but could talk about feelings. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And all the men who spoke, Robert touched their lives in different ways. Perhaps he worked on shows with them. One was the co-director and maker of the movie, Beyond Vanilla. Another was an actor friend of his that he'd known for many years. Another was a friend whose wife is a sex therapist. Another was someone else who knew him from a different perspective, maybe in the performing arts. And each of them was touched by Robert in a different way. But what I'm saying is that he had a way about him, which was his authenticity and his ability to go deep and be real, that touched people, everyone, and
right.
made everyone feel they knew the real Robert. Robert was what you see is what you get, is part of how Robert was. No bullshit, no pretense. He was as comfortable with royalty as he was with the person who's cleaning your toilet, and treated them with equal respect and regard. And, he was really an incredible person.
A true measure of a man, and he had good character. I mean, when you talk about that. Good character.
He did. And the measure of a person's life is sometimes, you know, how he's regarded when he's gone. And I just see in so many ways not only the legacy of the many, 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 many pieces of media he made, because he was in over 400 commercials,
right.
and several movies and many TV shows, but also, you know, he wrote a book on aphrodisiacs, and he made over 200 little movies that are part of the curriculum at Sex Coach U and Sexology U. And we've kept his narration as the voice. When you open the website, sexologyu.com, I think it's that one. No, it's the World Association of Sex Coaches, one of them. There's him narrating it, and we decided, no, we want to keep his voice. We want him to still have that presence with us, even though it made me cry every time I heard it. So, it's, you know, the measure of a life. And, you know, I hope that everyone listening understands that, you know, you get to create your life, and you get to leave behind your legacy. So you better get going if you haven't started on it yet.
So true, Patty. I'm really, really glad that we've been able to talk about Robert. And, of course, as you know, a big part of your own grieving process is being able to talk about your beloved and what he meant to you. And and then in private moments, I'm sure you cry and vent.
Absolutely.
Yes. And we also both lost a dear friend in Candida Royale, Candace. And I, after hearing of her death, I could not stop crying. Like you, I guess, you know, I knew her for 20 years, and she was so special, and she's been on this program, and in the past, and she was even on my program when I was in Hawaii, when I was on the air there for 5 years.
Yes.
But she left a legacy with all the films and so many other things, too. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, Robert and I had the privilege of making a retrospective tribute to all of her life's work.
Mm-hmm.
And we originally did this in 2008 when I had my final conference as the ASEC president in New Orleans. That was an anniversary, I don't remember which one, maybe 40th. And what's so interesting about it is that when she died, I actually was invited to give a tribute to her with Robert at Catalyst Con on the West Coast here the year that she died. And so it was just wonderful to be able to share memories. And we had a full room of people who knew her and were either devoted followers of her incredible body of work, or friends of hers, or had worked with her. And it was just beautiful to be able to celebrate a life. And that's really what I think, you know, a service should be about. It shouldn't be about wail, wail, mourn, mourn, oh dear. It should be about celebrating and giving a tribute to a life well lived. What we said about Robert is, a man well loved, a life well lived. And that's true. That's really what it was about.
And I love
I
that.
Hope we
a
all
man
can
well
have that.
Loved, a life well lived.
Yes.
Yeah. So we, dear Patty, we did not get to about half of our agenda for today. And so I'm wondering if in the beginning of the new year, you might consider a part two so that we can
Absolutely.
Talk about. So we were going to also talk about, well, we already did a little bit, but the sex coaching and how it differs from clinical sexology. I always love talking about your MEBES approach, M-E-B-E-S, an acronym,
yeah.
and we can develop further talk about that. And I love
sure.
what you wanted to discuss, which is what strategies do you, Patty, recommend for self-help before someone needs sex coaching or clinical sexology or therapy like I do?
Exactly.
So the men, the top issues, the women, the top issues, couples, top issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the past, we talked about couples, couples,
sure.
top issues. And there are many, of course. And the number one thing that I see all the time is mismatched desire or sexless marriages.
Me too. That's it.
Yep.
That's the primary.
That's the primary one. And then I also, when you wrote up what you'd like, the agenda, I think this is great. What's a tip for lasting sex and love that you can give to our listeners? And I, of course, want to throw in my two cents as well, because this is huge.
Well,
how do you
it,
keep...
It is. And
how do you keep love
alive and thriving?
Yeah. You know, there are a number of things. And I think that, you know, we really want a partner who sees who we really are and not only accepts it but improves it, right?
Yeah.
And we try to bring out the best in each other. I've certainly experienced that with Brian. I used to experience it with Charlie. I'm sure you experienced it with your beloved Robert.
Every
and
day.
Yeah. So you'll come back in 2018, I hope.
Absolutely.
Good,
we'll
my
keep
darling
doing
friend.
This.
And so we're I wish you a happy birthday on the 30th. I mean,
thank
yeah.
you.
It is the 30th, right?
It is the 30th. 2
yeah,
days from now. Yes.
Right. So,
and we'll blow kisses up to Robert tomorrow, his which would have been his birthday.
I will, for sure. And, yes, dear Robert, oh, my goodness. Well, all of you listening, the music is, we usually stop at a couple minutes before the hour, and there it is. So thank you, Dr. Patty, so much. This has
thank
been
you,
a very
love.
Personal and meaningful show. For me, I hope for you, and I hope for our listeners.
Yeah. I hope so. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Happy feet. Da-da-da. Happy feet. Da-da-da. Happy feet.